Going Linux, episode 92, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Whether you're new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
Currently, we create 3 episodes a month. We release listener feedback episodes at the beginning of each month and user experience episodes near the end.
Following the third Tuesday of each month, we post Larry's appearances on the live Computer America show.
In the user experience episodes, we take 2 months to cover a topic, first an introduction, then an in-depth look at the Linux operating system and its applications.
In today's episode, we have listener feedback. We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
Well, Tom, we finally have a date and a time for my talk at the Southern California Linux Expo.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it'll be February 21st, and that is the Sunday of the show.
Sunday, yep.
And I'll be talking from 3 to 4 p.m.
You got an hour's worth of material?
No, what they like to do is have 45 or so minutes of talk and then 15 minutes or so of questions.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. Hey, we do 30 to 50 minutes every month just on user experience episodes. So I think I can come up with, you know, an hour's worth of stuff if I need to.
Sure. I'll Google for you and see if I can find any good Linux jokes to open with.
Yeah.
Penguin and, walks into a bar.
Yeah.
So, Larry, let's get down to our listener feedbacks. And first one is from Jonathan.
Jonathan provided us with an announcement, and you may have heard this on other Linux podcasts, but even so, it's definitely worth repeating. He writes, "Dear Tom and Larry, I'm writing to see if you can announce the opening of my website, Frostbite Systems. Frostbite Systems is an online company that builds and sells pre-installed Linux computers. The distros we install on our computers are Ubuntu, Mandriva, OpenSUSE, Fedora, Sabayon, and Linux Mint. We also install others upon request. We are open to suggestions for other products that the community would like to see offered. By supporting Frostbite Systems, you will also be supporting the distro you have installed on the computer. With each purchase made, Frostbite Systems will donate a portion of the proceeds to the distribution that the customer chooses to have installed. We are also offering blind-optimized computers for blind and low-vision users. We use Ubuntu and install the Orca screen reader and configure it to work properly. So when the blind or low vision user receives their Frostbite system, Orca will immediately work out of the box. Being a blind user myself, I understand that it can be frustrating to depend on a sighted helper to get the new computer configured. We will configure Orca to work with its optimal settings. Please contact us to let us know what we can do to meet your needs as a member of the community. Thank you for your time and all your hard work. I'm a big fan of the show. Keep up the great work. Truly, Jonathan Nedo, owner, Frostbite Systems." And the email address for Frostbite Systems is frostbitesystems.com, FrostbiteSystems.com.
And that's very cool. Not only that they're putting different Linux distributions on there, but that they're making the donations to those distros, and that they cater to the blind and low vision. That is very nice.
Right. And as he says in his email there, they don't make just blind and low vision computers. They make all kinds of Linux computers available on the internet for sale. So please, let's support Jonathan and his effort at Frostbite Systems. Great endeavor, Jonathan, and thanks for giving back to the community as well.
Yeah, good work, Jonathan. And, okay, so next up we've got one from Yorgi. And he gave us these suggestions for making going Linux even better. He says, hi, Larry and Tom.
Hi, Yorgi.
I hope you're both well and not becoming too overwhelmed by the growth of interest in Linux. Your podcast commitments must surely impact your family life. What family life? Since I last wrote to you back in mid-September 2009, I finished going through all of your podcast, and I am much more impressed with the power and usability of Linux. All of my Windows XP machines at home now have Ubuntu 9.10 as a dual boot. That's what I call progress. The family love it, especially CompiS, and they all boot into Ubuntu when doing online banking and other secure sensitive internet browsing. So, how can you improve going Linux? As I trawled the various Linux SIGs, special interest groups, distro sites, and Linux forums, I noticed one common theme. Everyone raves about their latest release, how good their version of Linux is, the best screen candy, and the latest bells and whistles. There is also an atmosphere of geekiness about them. If an ordinary, non-techie Windows user wanted to explore the possibility of moving to Linux, they would be put off if they visited such sites. What we don't hear enough about is how Linux is helping businesses and ordinary individuals in the real world, not in the geek world. Why did they migrate? Has Linux replaced every system? What difficulties did they encounter? Why did they choose a particular distro? I suggest, therefore, that you should set aside a section of the podcast which is called Gone Linux. In this, you could invite interviews from the major distro companies to talk for 10 minutes, say, about one of their successful implementations or migrations to Linux on the desktop. I'm sure Novell, Red Hat, Ubuntu, etc. would love to tell the world how well they're doing, and the free publicity would be welcome. You could even ask them to pre-record such news announcements to minimize your workload. Ask your listeners to send in stories or MP3s on how their families are using Linux, what they like or not about it, and what keeps them still using Windows, if they are. Secondly, as your podcast library grows, it becomes difficult to find previous articles or topics you have covered. As a simple solution, I suggest that you post the podcast show notes and articles as a Word, oops, I meant OpenOffice, table. Just two columns. Column 1 contains the podcast show number. Column 2 contains the show content. You can then sort and search on any topic in the show notes and readily identify the show number in which the topic was covered. That's all for now. Keep up the good work. Regards, Yorgi, in Berkshire, England. Or it's probably pronounced Berkshire.
Well, Yorgi, that's an excellent idea. Actually, a number of excellent ideas there. And in fact, I think what we will do is we'll take some of our emails from this month's listener feedback and put them into a section called Gone Linux at Your Suggestion. And I've picked out some of the emails that relate to people who have gone Linux in their real life. And I like the idea of asking our listeners to provide emails and contributions to the show about how they have adopted Linux and why they've made the switch and those kinds of things. So this is a call out to the Going Linux listeners to do just that, and we'll include them in our Gone Linux section, the first of which will be in this episode.
And as far as interviews goes, that's a really good idea. We should be doing that. I'm not real sure technically how we would do it.
Well, I think we could
We could do a Skype conference call.
Just what I was thinking. Yeah, I think that's a good idea, Tom.
You would have to initiate it, I think.
Okay, we'll work it out. We will work it out.
Sure.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, thanks, Yorgi. And that last little bit on providing an index, if you will, to our show notes. If you go to our show notes page, we have done that for the podcast portion, but not for our articles. There is on our webpage an articles tab or an articles button you can click on. And there are a couple of ways I've indexed it there. One is by chronological order, reverse chronological order, that is, with the most recent article at the top, and the other is alphabetically by topic. So hopefully that meets your needs. If not, I'll reconsider doing something along the lines of what you're asking about. But what we're doing so far is a bunch of work, and both Tom and I are doing this in our spare time. So, Tom, this is our first Gone Linux segment.
All right, yay!
So, our first email in the Gone Linux segment is from Lester, who wrote us. He says, "Hi, Larry and Tom."
Hi, Lester. Lester.
"I like the way you shout out the greetings. Keep it up." We will.
All right.
"I have now been using Ubuntu on my Dell Inspiron notebook for quite a while, ever since about May of last year. One of the things that sold me on Linux was the ease at which I could just plug in a USB Connect Mercury cell phone for data connection anywhere you have a signal. In Windows, it takes about 20 minutes to do the install. In Ubuntu, plug it in, it asks about two or three questions, and it just works. However,"
right.
"Yeah. However, when I upgraded to Koala, I started having the problem that sometimes it would connect, but the computer couldn't use the signal. Some kind of conflict. You had to disconnect and reconnect, hoping it will work now. I finally found a solution online. Changed the DNS server it uses to something permanent instead of letting it look for a DNS server. I changed this one to OpenDNS, and now it flies. After almost a year, I find myself not missing wind blows at all. The few times I have to use it, I am reminded again that Linux just does what I want it to do without having to kiss the Microsoft gods, cross my fingers, look cross-eyed, and hope it works. I enjoy the show. Keep it up. Lester, a.k.a. Amish Trucker."
Amish Truck.
Hey, Lester, thanks very, very much for your email.
And for the help with getting that OpenDNS is wonderful.
It is absolutely wonderful. And I'm not sure why changing DNS would fix that problem, but maybe there was something else going on coincidentally. Yeah. You know, I don't think that was a Linux thing, but you never know.
And next up, we have Raphael. And he writes, Tom/Larry/Raphael.
Hi, Raphael. /Raphael.
"I just wanted to drop you a note to thank you for this great podcast. I'm new to Ubuntu and have always wanted to switch from Windows, but I never had the courage to follow through. That is, until my wife's PC was rendered useless following a virus malware infestation. I tried everything to remove all the nasties, and even after my AV programs report that my system is 100% clean, I no longer trust Windows. After plowing through the first 25 episodes of your podcast, I have finally decided to move to Ubuntu. So far, I managed to get my PC back online with a live version running from a 4 GB bootable USB drive without any problems, and all my hardware seems to be recognized, including my printer. I managed to do this by following all of your tips and advice. Thank you, and keep doing what you're doing. Raphael S." All right. Excellent story, Raphael.
Yes, very good. And congratulations on making the switch. Our next Gone Linux email is from Scott, and he has indeed Gone Linux. "Hi, Larry and Tom." Hi, Scott.
Hi, Scott.
"I have got into Linux because the old Windows backup disks didn't work, and I didn't press the F10 key, which I think was a good thing now. My system is so old, it will only run Crunchbang. I updated it and loaded the GNOME desktop and made it the default session. From there, I ran the system updater and went with Karmic 9.1. relatively new to this, I got a lot of tweaks finally done. But I still want to get the screen to have the icons down in the bottom middle like the Mac OS. But I cannot figure out how. I hope you can tell me, and that it's not part of CompUs, because the computer will not run even the lowest end of it. The computer is an A335W HP with 256 megs of memory. If that helps to see if I can run whatever it is that I'm looking for. Though the system freezes up once in a great while, I am pressing this machine to the limit, I believe, but still would not trade it. Still loving it. Thanks, Scott.
Well, thank you, Scott. And you want to right-click up in the panel, and a menu will drop down. Click on Properties. And then for orientation, change that to bottom, and you're all set. That panel will go to the bottom.
Yeah, I think he's also wanting to have it so that it behaves like the Mac bar does at the bottom, the icon bar. I don't know what they call it on a Mac, where the little icons kind of pop up as you hover over them. And you can achieve that effect using GNOME Do. But that, I believe, does require CompUs in order to get that working.
That's out of the question for
Scott.
Yeah,
I think so. I think the best you can do is move that panel to the bottom, as Tom suggests. Not exactly what you're looking for, but close, I think.
Yeah.
And if anybody knows a way to get a Mac-style bar at the bottom, icons at the bottom, without using CompUs, let us know.
Okay, next email. Luke said, "Hi, Larry and Tom! Exclamation mark, smiley face.
Hi, Hi, Luke.
Exclamation mark, smiley face. Just listened to show 89. Great show again. Then you reminded me about the older version of Skype working. I'm having problems with my Kubuntu 9.10 and 2.1.0.47 beta. I have to add Pulse Audio onto KDE to get my Plantronic D400 headset to work, but I get a terrible delay on Skype going out. And all the forums I've read said to just remove Pulse Audio, but then my headset doesn't work. Where can I find the older version of Skype, like the one you use? Many thanks. Cheers, Luke."
Well, and I have led Luke into the right direction on finding that older version of Skype. So hopefully he has installed that and everything is up and running once again.
And Luke, I feel your pain on 9.10 and the Pulse nonsense. And I went through the forums and tried all that stuff, tried to remove Pulse Audio, and it's just a headache. So I'm still on 9.04. And might be for the rest of my life.
No, with the long-term support release coming up, Tom, I'm sure it will work just fine.
Sure, I'm sure.
Yeah. Our next regular email is from Rex, who wrote us with a message and an idea. He says, "Hi, guys. My name is Rex DeGiri, and I love the show."
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
You gotta pause after "hi, guys."
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. "Hi, guys." Hi, Rex.
Hi, Rex.
"My name is Rex DeGiri, and I love the show. I don't think that I sent you an invitation to this yesterday, so I wanted to make sure. I just started a Linux Ogcast. It's at acrosad.org, and let me spell it out. We'll have a link, of course, in the show notes. It's www.acrosad.org, and for the RSS feed, you follow that with /audio/RSS.xml. That's the file you want to put into your podcatcher. He continues, "I also have a revolutionary business idea that I want to build in a revolutionary way. An open community where there is no one owner, everyone owns it, and everyone reaps the financial benefits. I talked about the idea in detail in my Ogcast today, episode 3. Enjoy it. Sincerely, Rex DeJury.
Well, I've heard this idea. Last time I heard of it, it was coming from Mao Zedong.
That's not what he has in mind, Tom. A little different. Yeah, and, you know, rather than try to comment on it ourselves, let's let our listeners listen to it and read through his blog post and participate if you wish, and if it makes sense to you. So good luck, Rex.
Yeah, I have to check it too. I have no idea. I'll go take a listen.
Right.
All right, next up, this one's from James, in response to Larry's comment about his email on Computer America. Hi, Larry and Tom. Hi, James.
Hi, James.
A couple Computer Americas ago, a listener called in with a question about missing programs. It seems he installed several KDE programs under GNOME and couldn't find them. It seems he installed several KDE programs under GNOME and couldn't find them. He corrected the problem, with corrected in quotes, by installing KDE and then running KDE programs in KDE. You had no solution for the problem. The listener was coming from the Windows world. In Windows, if you install a program, it puts an icon in the tray, one in the desktop and one in the menu. There's no problem finding new programs. Ain't necessarily so with Linux. GNOME and KDE menus are prepackaged with the programs that automatically install with the system, and they may add additional programs when you install them, or they may not. The program did install, it just didn't automatically add a menu entry. To correct the problem, you first have to find the program, then see if it works. I do this by opening a terminal and typing sudo update db, that's all one word, updatedb, and when the cursor returns, typing sudo locate the program name and then a pipe and the word less. Okay, I think this is our first pipe on the air, Larry. A pipe redirects the output of a command into the input of another command, sort of.
Yeah.
And the pipe is just a vertical bar.
Yeah, on the US keyboard, it's usually above the backslash key, and in other keyboards from international configurations, I can't begin to wonder where it would be, but it's the vertical bar.
Yeah, it looks like a capital I, but without the little ticks on the top and the bottom, kind of. Okay. Since many programs have pieces in more than 20 places, I pipe the output into less so I can view all of it. Somewhere in the ball of stuff you get back, you will find a line like /bin/program name/program name or /local/bin/program name/program name or similar. Type that string into the console. If the program is all there and not system level, it should start to run. If it doesn't run, it'll tell you why it didn't. In the case it does run, open the menu editor and add an entry for the program. Now you're done. You now have a clicky thing to start the program, and it's no longer missing. If the program was system level, you have to type sudo first for it to run. You'll also have to add the sudo to the menu entry. Other startup errors may require locating and installing dependencies, or if major, library conflicts, etc., simply given up on. Synaptic is good, but not perfect. Here's an experiment for you. Go to the /etc directory and into the /etc/d directories and comment out all the lines that say S number GDM. Then restart your computer. You will find yourself logging into a text console. You can then browse the web, start a web server, open and read mail, open and edit a spreadsheet, write a letter, etc. Anything you can do on a modern operating system that doesn't require accelerated graphics. If you have GPM running, you can even highlight, cut, paste with a mouse. Once you've played with this for a while, type STARTX. G, just like typing Win in DOS. The GUI will start up and you can do all the pretty pointy clicky things you do in a GUI. But the console is still there in virtual terminals 1 through 6. The X window system, desktop manager, and window manager are simply processes running in virtual terminal 7. When you click on a menu entry or icon, you are inserting text into a virtual command line and running it. You are working with a text-based console operating system with a GUI pasted on top of it. The console is hidden, but it's still there handling operating system calls. James Daldry, Raleigh, North Carolina.
Well, James, I understand where you're coming from here. I know that when I was reading your email on Computer America, due to the lovely conditions involved in doing something on live commercial radio in the United States, we ran out of time and really couldn't do the email that you sent us at that time justice. And I made the comment, kind of summing up, that your comment about Linux being just a text-based, command line-based operating system with a GUI pasted onto it was probably, well, I made the comment that made it sound like that might not be a kind comment to have made about Linux, and you can argue either way. I really believe that the GUI is an integral part of a modern Linux operating system, and although you could say that Linux is a command line operating system with GUI pasted on it, you could really say that about any operating system. Even Windows these days, even though, you know, they have done a lot to hide and to eliminate the ability for the average user to get into the command line in Windows and use only the graphical user interface, it's still there. It still has a lot of commands available to the average user and to the system administrator. So, Linux isn't any different in this manner. And so, one thing I have to say about your suggestion for someone to go in and try commenting out the S and the number GDM lines in the directories, for our average user, the typical audience that we're targeting at, the beginner user, don't do that.
Right.
Don't even try that because although James' suggestion will work just fine, it's really more for the advanced user, and as you could probably tell from his descriptions, James is more of an advanced user, and, you know, I could make a suggestion that I'm sure James already knows rather than having to scroll through the sudo locate program name command and pipe it into less. You could also then pipe it using grep and find what you're looking for. But sure. Then having said that, I probably just lost most of our beginner user audience. So, I really don't want our beginners going and doing that because by doing what James suggests, you're putting your computer in a condition that you have to know how to back out of. And for the advanced user, it's pretty simple. For the beginner user, it's pretty easy to get very lost and have a system that is now only a command line system.
And to explain what James means about virtual terminals, you can go text-based into a terminal by hitting Control-Alt-F1. And now you'll find yourself in a text-only environment. And to get back to the graphical environment, you hit Control-Alt-F7.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, you can use F1 through F6 and have 6 different virtual terminals or consoles running. But the way to get back is Control-Alt-F7. And do not use this if you happen to be using, what were you using that day when you tried it, Larry, and it just blew you out of the water?
Yeah, I think I was running two monitors, and I had never tried it with two monitors before, and at least on my hardware, it froze. So
yeah,
you might want to be careful about doing that with dual monitors, or maybe I was just, maybe it's just my hardware, or maybe I was doing something wrong, but it didn't work for me. Well, thanks for the email, James. And let's go on to an email from Scott, a different Scott this time. And Scott wrote,
okay.
Hi, Larry and Tom. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Scott.
First, let me say you guys rock. I've been using Linux off and on for a couple of years now, starting with Ubuntu 8.04 on a Gateway M405 laptop. I tinkered for a few months, dual booting with that other operating system that shipped on the machine. As time went on, I found myself booting into the OS less and less often. How many times have you heard that before? I kept the same version of Ubuntu the entire time, being fairly happy with how everything worked, until I broke something in it that I just couldn't figure out how to repair. I did a fresh install of 9.10 after formatting the hard drive and haven't looked back. Since installing 9.10, I've been listening to your podcast from the very beginning all the way up to the current episode 89, which I finished last night. The easygoing way you guys present the material, the topics covered, the feedback from listeners, all of it comes together in a very entertaining and informative package. The confidence and competence I have gained by listening have enabled me to install 9.10 on another machine at home in my son's bedroom and a machine at work next to my desk. I have yet another machine I plan to put together for my daughters, and then there is a server at work I plan to try running with Ubuntu Server. While listening to episode 89 last night, I heard you guys discussing Kden Live. I just finished putting together a video presentation using Kden Live as one of my tools for my oldest daughter's 16th birthday party. So it was interesting hearing about your experiences. When I started out using it, I was pretty disappointed. Using the 0.7.6 package recommended by Kden Live from the Sunab, or from the Sunab, S-U-N-A-B, alternative repository was much better, and turning off Compiz desktop effects using Compiz Switch, thanks very much for that tip, made it fairly stable to use. It's not perfect, but it runs for me much better than any other editors I've found to date. All right, this has gone on far too long, but I just wanted to thank you guys for the work you do. You'll never know just how many you have impacted and convinced to try something new. Keep up the good work, your Linux friend, Scott. And I think that should have been in the Gone Linux segment. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, we kind of kludged this together at the last second here, the Gone Linux part.
Yeah.
But, that's a Gone Linux for sure.
Scott followed up with another email. What's that about, Tom?
Okay, he followed up. He said, hi, Tom and Larry. And notice how I switched the order around from my previous email.
Hi, Scott.
GPOD apparently was not set correctly on my work PC, so I missed the fact that you have finished and uploaded two more episodes. Thus, instead of actually being caught up, as my earlier email stated, I am still two episodes behind. However, with a little time spent this weekend, I think I can get caught up again, only for real this time. Nevertheless, I think I will still be current before you finish and upload another episode after these two. Keep rocking, Scott. Okay, Larry, let's keep rocking.
Yes, okay, rock on. And our next email is from Pete. Pete has a ways to go before he catches up. Dear Larry and Serge, Pete, you definitely have a way to go before you catch up. You'll find out as you listen to future episodes that you should be saying, Dear Larry and Tom, but we'll let you catch up. Okay.
Yeah.
I've just discovered your podcasts. Wow. Tone and content of the podcast are great. Structure is excellent. Integration with website, fantastic. I have been making slow but determined progress in de-Microsofting my life over the last 3 years. started with open source applications on Windows, currently having fun with Ubuntu 8.04 and now 9.10 on desktop, dual boot, and compact laptop, single boot, by accident. I think you're going to make my life much easier. Many thanks. Please keep up the great job you guys are doing. I will be making my way through the current 91 episodes as soon as possible and will subscribe. My goals in listening to your podcasts are, firstly, to improve my skills with Linux and be able to move on and try different distros without spending ages doing background research. But more importantly, I'd like to help others follow the path to enlightenment. Kind regards, Pete.
Thanks, Pete. And as of this moment, we have a new verb in the English language, de-Microsoft. To de-Microsoft.
Yes. The act of removing everything Microsoft from your computer.
There you go.
Yes.
Okay, next up, Jim asked what it means to install software. Hello, Larry and Tom. Hiya, Jim.
Hello, Jim.
I have a question about software. What does it mean to have something installed? Does this mean that it's added to $path? Does it mean there's a link? Where are user-installed programs usually stored? I ask because I've seen many ways of installing software. Software Center, deb files, building from source, and I'm never quite sure the software is actually installed. Back in Windows land, yes, I do dual boot, and I liked Vista too, there's only one way to install something. You point, click, and somehow the program shows up in your start menu, the registry, and is installed. If I knew what it means to install something on Linux, I'd be more comfortable with software management on Linux. Anyhow, thanks for the podcast, Jim.
So, Jim, there are a number of ways to install software on Windows and a number of ways to install software on Linux. And for the most part, the various ways on Linux are different ways to accomplish exactly the same thing. You know there's a way to install Linux applications using the command line. You can use the Synaptic Package Manager if you're using a distribution like Ubuntu, where Synaptic is part of the distribution. And you also have the Software Center, where you can install applications from there. The Software Center and the Synaptic Package Manager are exactly the same way of installing things, with the exception that Synaptic gives you the ability to search through everything that's available in the repositories, whereas the Software Center highlights some of the more popular applications and groups them into categories, much like you might find with music in iTunes or something like that. So it's all the same. Even the command line interface, if you do an apt-get, you're doing the same thing. And if you download a .deb file and double-click it, it opens in GDebi. Well, that program does the same thing. So yeah, there are different ways to install software, but they all do it very, very similarly. And in some cases, exactly the same thing, just a different way to get around it. So choose your favorite and use that one is my recommendation. And unlike Windows, where software is installed, God knows where, usually in the program files folder, but sometimes not. And some of it gets installed there. Some of it gets installed in various other places on your hard drive. And a good portion of it gets installed in the registry sometimes. With Linux, it is very predictable where it gets installed. It's different from one distribution to another sometimes because of different conventions. But for the most part, it gets installed in the same place, and your personal settings and configuration goes into your home directory into a hidden folder named for that particular application. So it is very predictable. And we discussed this at length in our file systems episode, so you might want to go back and listen to that one for more information about this.
And then Jim added in another email, in addition to my last email, check out Songbird. It's a cross-platform media player built on Firefox. It plays MP3s, has duplicate deletion tools, and supports most iPods. It is expandable with add-ons to do handy things like display lyrics or concerts. It even has an integrated store where users can buy MP3s. Jim.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. I think we've checked out Songbird in the past, Tom.
And yeah, I did a long time ago, and I went back to Rhythmbox. Songbird looked good, but I really didn't need anything that complex.
Yeah, and at the time, I think they had a very dark user interface. I think they've changed that, or at least given you the option to change it to something a little lighter. So it might be something we want to take a look at again.
Yeah, I'll go take another look at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll tell you the one I don't like at all is the one everybody loves, Amarok. Because when I run Amarok, as soon as I open it, it disconnects my MP3 player.
Right.
It dismounts it.
I remember you mentioning that.
Yeah, and I can unplug it and plug it back in. There's no way for me to mount it again until I close Amarok, and then I can have my MP3 player back. So that kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah, I've noticed that. It depends on the device as well. I've had various devices I've used for playing back audio, and when I was on KDE and using Amarok, and even when I switched to GNOME, I used Amarok for a little while, and I noticed that it depends on the device whether or not it recognizes it and maintains its connection, and sometimes from one distribution release to the next, it changes, or probably more accurately, from one release of Amarok to the next, it changes. So they're obviously working on it, and maybe it's a problem that they have recognized. But I have switched to GPotter for most of my Linux media playing needs, and that seems to work just fine.
Okay.
In our next email, Max wrote to us, "Hello, Larry and Tom." Hello, Max.
Hello, Max.
I just listened to your number 89 Going Linux podcast, listener feedback. This is in regards to Dave's request about reinstalling settings after a fresh install. Since he uses Linux Mint, I thought I should point out the Mintcast podcast guys have an article on their site on how to do this. I have provided a link, but it was done after their episode 3. Also, it is discussed in the Mintcast Episode 3 podcast about 23 minutes into the podcast. I hope this can be of help to Dave and other Linux users. And of course, Larry and Tom, keep up the good work. I continue to really appreciate your podcasts. Max. Thanks, Max.
Thanks, Max. And next up, Tony, a regular listener and a member of the Computer America chat room, wrote, "Hi, guys."
Hi, Tony.
Hi, Tony. "As of now, the OS that I'm using is Minty Fresh 8, but I also have Opera 10 and Google Chrome, which I am still wet behind the ears in using. I have a serious problem. I'm going to the Firefox plugin check page, and except for Flash, it's unable to detect the other plugin's version, in which case the others can't go up to date. Ergo, when I try to play something in MPlayer, it goes stopped. Oh, also, I'm not sure if I downloaded Firefox 3.6 version correctly. Can you tell me where I can go to verify this? All the best for 2010, Tony."
Well, I have to say, this is the first email where someone has actually used the word ergo.
Yeah, there you go. That's a first.
There we are. So let's see here. Taking these issues one at a time. Firefox plugin check page. You might just have to, Tony, reinstall the plugins. And of course, if they're not actually installed, you will not have them going up to date when you do an update. You know, they if they're not installed, they can't update. So you may actually have to go and reinstall the MPlayer plugin. And you can find that in the Synaptic Package Manager and just reinstall it. And it may have occurred when you did that upgrade to Firefox 3.6. It's possible that the plugins for the 3.5 version that you were using previously haven't been written for 3.6. So it may just have disabled them. Even though the 3.5 versions were installed. So that's one of the risks you run in adopting an update to a web browser early, is that many of the plugins just aren't available as soon as the release of Firefox comes out, the new release of Firefox right. comes out, where you can go to determine whether or not you're using the 3.6 version is in the help menu for Firefox. So open Firefox, go to the help menu, and then click on About Firefox. I think it actually says About Mozilla Firefox. And that should give you the version you're using. If it doesn't say 3.6, then it wasn't installed correctly. I suspect that since your plugins aren't working, that 3.6 was installed correctly, but that the plugins just haven't been updated to be compatible with 3.6 yet. I recommend right. that you go back to the 3.5 version that came with Mint, and wait for the newest version to be available in the repositories. When it's available there, you can be sure that it's going to be compatible with your plugins and other things. Would you agree, Tom?
Absolutely, yeah. And once again, that is, go to the menu at the top, click on Help, and scroll down to About, and you'll see what version you have.
Yep. Okay, and our next email is from John, who provided us with a software pick. He says, "Hi, Larry and Tom." Hi, John.
Hi, John.
"I really enjoy your podcast and find it quite helpful. I enjoyed the Advanced Gaming episode released just recently. I definitely agree with what you said about turning off CompUs before running any graphics-intensive games. Here's a tip for making toggling between running and not running CompUs easier. You will want to install the CompUs Fusion icon. If running Ubuntu, look for the Fusion-icon package in Synaptic Package Manager and install it. Once installed, look for it in the panel menu under Applications, System Tools, CompUs Fusion icon. Once launched, look for an icon that looks like a blue cube with a white mouse pointer floating in front of it. Right-click on this icon, and from the pop-up menus, choose Select Window Manager, and then Metacity. And for our listeners, Metacity is the window manager that GNOME uses by default if you don't have CompUs Fusion. And then wait a while for the screens to reload. If you use multiple desktops, when the screens reload, you will start in the first desktop. Note that all the windows that were open before changing the window manager, regardless of which desktop they were shown in before, will all open in the first desktop as well. Once done playing games, if you wish to restore CompUs, right-click on the CompUs Fusion icon again and select Window Manager, CompUs. Note that switching from CompUs to Metacity also seems to help video playback on YouTube, reducing choppiness when viewing on older computers like the one I'm using. This helps viewing in both Firefox and Google Chrome, though Chrome seems to display video better. I also have come across a Grease Monkey script that replaces the Flash player used for YouTube and others' videos with the M player that comes with Ubuntu, resulting in much better display of such videos. And we'll include a link to the script provided by John. I found this and several other tips on the Firefox optimization and troubleshooting thread in the Ubuntu forums. And we'll have a link to that particular thread as well. I hope your listeners might find these tips and links useful. Thanks again for the great podcast, John.
Thanks, John. Good tips.
Absolutely. And the CompUs Fusion icon is very similar to the CompUs Switch application that we recommended several shows ago and that previous emailer just mentioned a second ago. That CompUs Fusion is an orange cube with a red arrow in front of it. And it simply works by clicking on it and it turns on or off CompUs. The one that John is recommending is a cube, very similar in blue, with a white arrow in front of it. And you right-click on it and choose between CompUs and Metacity, the standard GNOME window manager. And when you want to switch back, you right-click and switch and choose the other one as well. There are a number of other settings available in the Fusion icon that John's suggesting. So I would recommend that you use one or the other, rather than both. although I'm sure yeah. both of them will work. The advantage of the one John recommends is that it is in the Ubuntu repositories, whereas the Compass Switch that we are both using, Tom, is not.
Yeah, where did we get that?
It was a suggestion, I believe, from a listener, and okay. we have both since been using it, and I have one computer using Compass Switch and the other using the Fusion Icon, and both work just fine.
Cool. Well, next up, Phil provided us with this message. Phil says, gentlemen. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Phil.
Listening to Going Linux 88, I have two rants, and one of which dovetails into a question.
So two rants and a dovetail. Okay. Got it.
Rant number one, a long discussion centered on Google and some concerns about them. Anyone who drinks the Kool-Aid and thinks Google is not evil is out of their mind. That company is plenty evil. I worked there for 3+ years. They do plenty of evil and screw up plenty of things they acquire. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And rant number two dovetails into a question. I have an Acer Aspire 1 model ZA3. This is the unit with the 1366 by 768 screen and 2 gig of RAM. Blew up Vista upon arriving home and replaced it with Ubuntu 9.04. This took tweaks to get full resolution and video that wasn't so slow as to make the unit unusable. I'm used to having to tweak the operating system to my needs. Actually, I have two of these, one for me and one for the wife. Along comes Ubuntu 9.10. On my Acer, the 9.10 release is flat out unusable. Previous tweaks to get proper display functionality no longer work. It would seem the Brain Trust has removed compatibility for the Intel graphics chipset. This is a major issue to me, as this machine is only a few months old. It's by no means obsolete. Every other distro update has made things better until now. These netbooks are for sale everywhere there is a Walmart. They're not going away. I'm forced to keep using 9.04 to both maintain domestic harmony and a usable system. I'm at a point where I'm likely to stay with a long-term support release as I want things to just work. However, I'm extremely concerned that the upcoming long-term service release is not going to address this issue. When you can actually see the screen redraw, that is unacceptable. With Linux supporting more than its fair share of older and obsolete hardware, I find it amazing that they didn't take the non-obsolete notebooks into account. Now the question. I would welcome any worthwhile suggestions as to correcting this issue with operating system tweaks. I want my screen to draw properly. I want my 1366 by 768 resolution. I want Flash to not look like a slideshow. I welcome any and all tweaks, workarounds, magic potions, or guru meditation chants to make it work. Happy New Year, Phil.
Well, yeah. Phil has some issues here. And, okay, well, let me read you what I had written back to Phil.
Okay.
Regarding your issues with your Acer and Ubuntu 9.10, you have run into the key problem with non-long-term support releases of Ubuntu, and actually any other distribution for that matter. The purpose of these releases is, to some degree, to experiment. The long-term support releases are meant to be stable and are more likely to support the largest range of current hardware. Having said that, it is possible that for some reason Canonical will decide not to support Intel graphics in the next long-term support release, but we won't know for sure until after it has been released. I suppose Linux could be like Mac and work with only certain hardware, or it could be like Windows and require that in order to use the latest release, you must upgrade your hardware and much of the other application software as well. Instead, Linux attempts to maintain as much support as possible for as many types of hardware as possible and provides the necessary application upgrades along with the operating system upgrades wherever possible. In fact, Linux has a disadvantage in providing support for some hardware. Some of the most popular hardware manufacturers provide no active support for the Linux operating system. Worse still, some of this group provide no support to enable Linux programmers to develop compatible drivers on their own. In fact, this last group is actually discouraging Linux compatibility. In the case of the Acer Aspire 1 ZA3, I don't know that the problem is with Intel, Acer, or Ubuntu, but there are a few possible solutions. Here are some of the forum threads I have found that address your issue, and I'll include links to those forum threads in our show notes. You might try these, and you might try contributing to the forum threads for support or to report your success and confirm that a solution worked for you. Let us know how it goes, and thanks for listening. And Phil responded to my email saying, "Thanks, Larry. I cruise the forum almost daily, and this appears to be an Ubuntu issue. I could live with the 1024 by 768 resolution. But if you also read some of the thread, the sluggishness of the video is horrible. In 9.04, it took easy tweaks to get things working properly. Using Ubuntu since Gutsy, every other update has been an upgrade until now. Thanks for the response. I enjoy the podcast. Phil." He continued later, "Thanks for the links. I am a regular contributor to the forum and have read all those links, but they really don't help with Karmic. For grins, I decided to try Crunchbang, and the system would only run a maximum of 10 minutes before freezing. Guess I'll have to hope the next release does the trick. Meanwhile, it's back to jaunty on my little netbook. Please put the Intel graphics chipset support back in the kernel, Mr. Shuttleworth." Phil. Yes.
Phil, Mr. Shuttleworth isn't listening to us.
I would doubt it.
You're going to want to put in bug reports.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if he was listening to us, you still need to put in the bug reports. I'm sure you have, Phil. Yeah. It sounds like you're pretty on top of this stuff.
I think, didn't Shuttleworth leave?
No, Shuttleworth he stepped down from his role at the top and is still certainly involved in Canonical and in Ubuntu, but there is a new leader at Canonical, and she is taking over from what Mark was doing, leading the ship and guiding its course. Okay. Yeah.
Next up, John wrote with a bit of a problem. John says, "Hi, Larry and Tom."
Hi, John.
Hi, John. "I can't remember if Ubuntu will run NTFS. I've installed it on my second hard drive and lost the drive letter. Windows on C drive can't see that drive anymore. Before Ubuntu, I could see the drive and share files, etc. I don't want to mess up again and corrupt my system. How can I use both drives? If Ubuntu would run and function in NTFS, that's okay. Do I have any options here? Thanks again for your great show. I do learn something every time. John."
Hmm.
And NTFS.
Yeah, recent distributions of Linux will recognize NTFS drives without installing anything special. It's built in now. So I suspect that there's something else going on here, John. I'm not sure at this point whether you want to access the Windows drive from Linux or whether you're asking whether Linux can be installed and will run on an NTFS formatted drive. Either way, it will work just fine. And in fact, if you do format the drive you're installing Linux on NTFS and you're dual booting into another drive with Windows that has access to that Linux drive, you should be able to see the Linux files on there because it's formatted NTFS. But I'm a little puzzled, Tom, as to what his question is. How about you?
I think, okay, here's what I think he's doing. I think he had one drive in there.
Uh-huh.
And I believe he's dual booting. And both Linux and Windows were able to read the drive. And then he added another drive and lost something. I'm not really comprehending what he lost.
Hmm.
But one of the systems can't see that old C drive.
Yeah, and I'm not clear from his email as to which one. So, John, maybe you could send us another email back clarifying what the issue is, and hopefully we'll be able to answer your question.
Yeah,
that would help. Yeah. Thanks, John. All right, next email is from Tim. Tim wrote, "Hi, guys."
Hi, Tim. Hi, Tim.
And Tim also wrote, "Larry and Tom in unison, hi, Tim." So thanks for the prompt there.
Yeah, we've got a script.
Yeah. He continues, "I was listening to Computer America where Craig was drooling while talking about his new Mac. It was mentioned that you can't put Linux on a Mac, and I've performed many Google searches that say you can. I traded an old Windows machine for a G4 Mac, Sawtooth Edition." Some of these Mac names get you, don't they? Sawtooth.
Yeah.
"It has OS 8.6, and I would like to put on any flavor of Linux I can. OS 8 is outdated, and I cannot do anything with it. This computer would be perfect for one of my daughters. Do you have any suggestions where I can go to get this done? I have booted to an OS 10 CD for an iMac, and thus it will not install on my G4. And I know the computer will boot to a CD, but I've tried to burn an ISO of Yellow Dog, and the G4 will not boot to it or recognize it if I boot holding down the Option key. I have installed Ubuntu, Mint, and CentOS to many ex-Windows machines, but the Mac is a different animal, and I want to learn more about it. But it's causing frustration at this time. Any help would be appreciated. Thanks in advance, Tim, Northern Minnesota."
And Larry responded to Tim that all of the recent Mac models use the Intel processor. With these, it's easy to install Linux on them because they'll take the same versions of Linux as a PC. With older Macs, the G4 being one of them, the older processor requires a version of Linux that is compiled specifically for the older PPC processors. Some Macs will not accept Linux at all. There is a Wall Street version that just won't take Linux no matter what you do. If you can install Linux on your G4, your options are limited. Yellow Dog is one option. There was also an older version of Ubuntu that was designed for the Mac, Ubuntu PPC, and we'll provide a link to that. And also a link to a forum post and a link to a site with other alternatives over at Pure Mac. Good luck, Tim, and thanks for listening. And I'd like to recommend that you contact our buddy Klaatu over on the Bad Apples podcast because he's really into that sort of thing.
Yes. And our final email is from John, another John, who wrote us, "Hello there." Hello, John.
Hi, John.
"I've been putting together some high-quality screencasts that may be helpful for some of your listeners. Foscasts are free open-source screencasts. They are short and to the point, usually under 10 minutes, and introduce a new Linux/Unix tool or set of tips. Episodes range from general command-line tips to how to actually use GNU Screen. I've got 15 up right now and release a new one every Friday. Check it out. Maybe worth a plug on the show. Best, John." And John will include your link. It is fosscasts.com, fosscasts.com. And thanks for that suggestion, John.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'll have to go check that out.
Right.
That's it for our emails this time. And I have a software pick, and it's Uck.
What?
Uck.
Is it really bad? What a name.
It's spelled UCK, and what it stands for is Ubuntu Customization Kit.
Yeah.
And what you do is you run Uck. And it looks a lot like you're doing a fresh install. And you can open the Synaptic Package Manager and add and remove programs at will, packages, applications at will. And then at the end of it, it burns a custom ISO for a live CD. So you're sort of putting together your own little distribution.
Nice.
So if you want to put something together for a friend and you know just what that friend's needs are, you can give them a live CD or a live DVD, because a lot of times it's going to come out over 700 megabytes, but it's a very slick application.
Wow. Yeah, so does this pick from the packages that you have installed, or it'll just pick anything from the repository?
Well, you start out with a live CD in your drive.
Uh-huh.
And you point to that, and it comes up with all of the default applications. So you can remove default applications. You can go into the repositories and add applications. And when you get all done, it makes the ISO that you can burn.
Okay. And UCK is available in the repositories, I imagine.
Yep.
Very good. Okay. Well, thanks for that. I can't top that, Tom. I don't have a software pick.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all right.
So having said that, thanks once again for a great episode, Tom. In our next episode, we will have Computer America number 23. Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, illustrations, and lots more stuff.
And you can email us with comments, questions, and suggestions. And remember, if you have a topic that you want us to cover on the show, use the Podcast Alley button on our website to leave your topic suggestion while you vote for us on their site.
You can also send us an audio comment by email. We'll play it on the show. Our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com.
You can follow our show updates on Twitter and Identica. We are Going Linux, all one word. You can download the episodes from the website, or you can use the Flash Player to play them right there on the show notes page.
You can also get future episodes delivered directly to your computer automatically as soon as new episodes are available. For instructions on how to subscribe to a podcast, go to subscribe.goinglinux.com, and subscribing is free. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.